Hi,
this is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist.
Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health, and I'm Corinne Fornari, and I'm here with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
We're here today to talk about an issue that I don't think gets enough attention for the amount of havoc that it can create in a person's life. So what we're going to speak about and explore is all levels of excessive uterine bleeding.
I was looking at a Facebook page I got into, and it's a page for women with hysterectomy. There's like 700,000 hysterectomies done every year in the United States. And some of the biggest causes are so treatable. About 10% might be some sort of cancer. And the rest are situations which are quite treatable, and it includes very excessive uterine bleeding and fibroids. So as I'm looking on this website with all these women with hysterectomy, I'm thinking many things, but those the situations of the heavy bleeding are not being addressed adequately by conventional medicine, in fact, very poorly, or these women would be driven to have a serious surgery. And then post-surgical treatment is terrible. And women end up with huge bloated bellies, lots of gas, pain, their pelvic floor collapses, they have bladder issues because the uterus and then sometimes the ovaries too, it all takes up space inside your abdomen. So you have a huge problems developing just because of that.
What happens is there's a cavity left in the pelvis. And that empty space, without the pressure of the organs, then leads to dropping of the pelvic floor. So it's a whole cascade of symptoms.
Okay, so let's back up. So additionally, I got an email from a physician, and her patient was having extremely heavy bleeding. And she prescribed 400 milligrams of progesterone, maybe it was 300 to 400 milligrams of progesterone every day for this patient. And the patient took it for 6 weeks. And apparently, after 6 weeks, he tried to taper down and bleeding resumed. So there's a few things I like about this, a few things I don't like. So in the menstrual cycle, day one is the first day of bleeding. Mid-cycle is ovulation, and to that point is the follicular phase. And then from mid-cycle to the end of the cycle, just when you start bleeding again, is the luteal phase. The luteal phase is well known to have a lot of progesterone on board. That is, if you're making it correctly and the receptors are all good and all that. But when the heavy bleeding occurs is because in the first part of the cycle, the follicular part, estrogen goes very high. It's very stimulant. You build up a big layer in the endometrium. And it's this time that we need to look at progesterone too, which is what I agree about. Progesterone is a significant adrenal hormone. And if you look at a chart, it looks like, oh, you have a little bit of progesterone when they draw the charts of the menstrual cycle, a little bit of progesterone level and high estrogen. But in reality, they measure, they have two different measurements, the progesterone and picograms per deciliter, and the estrogen is in nanograms. So really the progesterone, if it was all in the same unit, it would be 1,000 times higher than those estrogen levels. And this progesterone comes from the adrenals, can be in short supply when you're under stress and depleting your progesterone, leaving estrogen to build up a big layer. So this would be a really, really important thing. If you're heavily bleeding, you need to make sure that the first part of the cycle is covered with enough progesterone so you don't build up a big tissue layer at that point.
Now, I'd like to go back a little bit in that, who has the highest prevalence of heavy bleeding? Is it perimenopausal women who cease to ovulate and we find that their progesterone significantly diminishes? Is it young people who are starting their period? Is it female athletes? Are there populations that have a higher percentage of uterine bleeding?
Well, by far, it's the perimenopausal. Mm-hmm. There's a number of reasons for that, and that's why I'd like to throw up some flags of things for people to have some idea what to do. But the same thing does happen in younger girls when they're starting their cycles. They may have some very, very heavy bleeding, and the same issues would apply. And what was your third thought? Oh, athletes.
Female athletes.
Yeah, they tend to stop bleeding at all because of the rigorousness of their
workout protocol.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so they're not producing progesterone or estrogen very well, tend to not cycle, and then they end up with severe problems with things like osteoporosis after some years of that.
Now, I was told, and we all laughed when we heard this, what is the best way to treat a disease? And the doctor looks up, prevention. You prevent it. And then you avoid all the problems of treating. So how would we go about, and I have some thoughts and we could pass this back and forth, prevent the problem before it happens? That's a very powerful place to be in. First of all, you're in power. Second of all, you're taking hold of your health. And third of all, you're preventing a problem within your body. How would you begin?
Okay. Well, I can address that.
So can I. Why don't you begin?
When I was perimenopausal, I myself experienced two cycles of very heavy bleeding. So I understand how it can be disturbing. All of a sudden, you're gushing through whatever you have, tampons, pads, it becomes uncontrollable. And I can't imagine going for months and years like this.
Oh, my goodness. I've seen it many times.
Yeah, this is what some women are faced with. And I knew to use progesterone. I even used just an over-the-counter cream, but I used it very liberally at the time. I was trying to remember how many milligrams. I think at least 120 milligrams. And it was adequate, and a few cycles of more mindful using of progesterone, and the problem was over. So that's what I want to say. First and foremost, what I was saying before, there's not enough progesterone activity to oppose the estrogen in the first part of the cycle when the uterine tissue normally builds up. Now, progesterone can get diverted to hydrocortisone, and when that's happening, it's caused by stress. You're losing your progesterone from your adrenals by excessive stress.
Now,
so how would you address that?
Well, I would do a few things, and it's, we're going right back to basics, and I see it in my patients, and I work with it in my patients. Number one, I look at their sleep patterns. That's number one. And I get them sleeping, and I give them melatonin at night as a hormone balancer, but also to calm the brain. I also look at diet. Now, we know that very specific diets, many diets can increase natural estrogens in our body and slow down the conversion of estrone, which is a very high inflammatory hormone, to estradiol, and then to the weakest estrogen of all, estriol. And we know that a lot of this takes place in the liver. So first of all, we look at our diet and we increase our fibers. Fibers are essential to be able to balance our hormones. And I love beans. In this case, I love beans. They're very good for, it has a natural estrogen, but not, they're like selective estrogens, and they do not stimulate the inner wall of the uterus, but yet they work on the skin and in the body, in the rest of the body, as a very mild estrogen balancer. And so I love fibers, I love vegetables, I love essential fats, important. And then I work with the liver to cleanse the liver. I'll never forget, years and years ago, I was in a naturopath chiropractor's office that I was working in, and on his desk he had a book called PMS and Liver Detox, and that was over 40 years ago, and I literally couldn't believe it. I picked up the book and asked to borrow it. I read the whole thing through, and what they explained was the essential part of the liver to help balance the hormones. And how do we help the liver work? There are multiple ways that we can support our liver. One, just by omission, trying to reduce the chemicals and the toxins that go into our body. And number two, there are multiple herbs that we can use to support the liver. One of them is green tea. It works on every phase of liver metabolism to allow it to work efficiently. Another is stinging nettles or sulamarian. Another is licorice. Another is dandelion. So we can incorporate those as food, and artichoke, another important one. We can incorporate it as food. We can use it as teas. But what we're doing is beginning to balance the liver, which then has a very important role in breaking down the hormones and allowing their excretion through the bowel.
That's right. I'd like to rephrase it a little bit. Estrogens require that your liver is able to conjugate or put together another compound in your body to make it water soluble and to get rid of it. And these conjugates for estrogen are methyl groups, vitamin B's, all of them, all the active ones. Sulfur things like glutathione are needed to create sulfur groups.
Adequate proteins also. And
right.
Did you say B vitamins?
What's that?
Did you say B vitamins?
B vitamins for the methyl group. B6, B12, folic acid, all help methylate And when you methylate the estrogen, you're making it ready for excretion and to leave the body. So the estrogen burden is lowered. There's another thing that goes on to the gut. This is a little more complex. We call it enterohepatic recirculation. You and I spent a lot of time talking about the microbiome and keeping a healthy microbiome. And some of your very practical ideas with diet directly address the microbiome, really. So when the microbiome is off, there are some bacteria, if they overgrow, they produce too much beta-glucuronidase. And what it does is cleave off the conjugates that I was speaking about before, and it turns the estrogen back into its fat steroidal form, not the water-soluble form, and your body reabsorbs it. So instead of the natural detoxification of estrogen, your body keeps piling on extra and extra and extra. And this is a place where a supplement called Indol 3, calcium D-glucarate works. Indol 3 carbonate is another one that supports liver detoxification, which is also a good one. And DIM, a lot of people have been using DIM for excess estrogen, or help your body detox or eliminate excess estrogen.
I always give DIM to males who are in any way attempting to enhance their hormones to allow their liver not to convert testosterone to estrogen. I find it very effective and not a total block. So all of these different things that we're discussing are supports. And it's very interesting. I remember we were speaking with Christine Horner, and she was emphasizing flax, continuously emphasizing flax and how important it was, in particularly in dealing with estrogen-stimulated tumors. And then I remembered a study that was about ground flax seeds. What they knew was that if women took ground flax seeds, they reduced their PMS symptoms. The assumption was that it was reducing hormones, and particularly reducing estrogens. So they did a test and found their hormone level, and then did a test after flax seeds. The women across the board felt less symptoms. These were all symptomatic women. But when they measured the estrogens, they were all the same. And then what they found later, they said, well, they couldn't figure it out. So then they started fractionating the estrogens. And what they found was with ground flax seeds, 2 tablespoons, about 1/8 cup of ground flax seeds, what they found was that the estrogens were not reduced, but they were converted. They were converted from estrone, which is a very strong, aggressive hormone, all the way to estriol, which is a very weak hormone. When you measured the hormone, when you measured estrogen, it was the same number. But when you fractionated it, there'd been a complete conversion of the way the hormone is being metabolized. And that is very beneficial when you're dealing with uterine bleeding, when you're dealing with fibroids, which can be a direct cause of uterine bleeding.
I'd like to address the issue of hidden estrogen. People are just nuts for measuring things, and they're getting hormone tests, and it's not reflecting what's actually happening.
Just like the study.
Yeah, you have to go a little bit deeper. Now, there are many things that have estrogenic quality, and things like solvents and insecticides, that are prevalent in our food system. Glyphosate, which we've talked about on the radio before, tends to be estrogenic. And now I am invited to make some remarks about dental amalgam, which has heavy metals, the heavy metals will sit in estrogen receptors and cause estrogenic activity, particularly mercury, which is in
all the amalgams,
which are the dark fillings in your mouth, but all kinds of other heavy metals that we're exposed to will cause disruption, and it will be an activation of the estrogen receptor, producing actual estrogen-type activity that will never show on the type of tests that we use, whether it's urine, serum, saliva, capillary blood, whatever. You're not going to find these estrogens there or the heavy metals there. You have to have specific special testing that very few practitioners actually do for their patients to try to understand some of the intricacies that can be accounting for this problem. So in the case of all these other estrogens or xenoestrogens, as they can be called, whether they're solvent type or they're heavy metal, I only know of one thing that can help reduce that burden, and that's sauna. How about you? Do you have any ideas more than that, or a sauna protocol you recommend?
I think sauna is wonderful. It's a wonderful idea because one of our largest detoxing organs is our skin. And so by getting our bodies to sweat, and then it's very important to shower afterwards with soap to wash off the toxins off our body. Or if we just sauna and then go about our day, what will happen is it'll all be reabsorbed again. Because as well as it detoxes and releases, it takes in also. So I love sauna. I also like chelation therapy. And then I love chelation therapy, IV chelation. It pulls out heavy metals and toxins out of the body. But there are also oral chelators. One formula is called Chelex. It's with EDTA. There used to be another form of chelator, but I don't think it's sold over the counter any longer. But you know what else is a good chelator? It's very pure seaweed. Very strong heavy metal chelator. That's why it's so essential to get your seaweed from a trusted source, because if seaweed is in water with lots of heavy metals, it absorbs it all because it's chelating out the water. It's pulling the metals out of the water. That's why the source of seaweed that I get is from northern Canada, from these peninsulas that have no lakes going to them, or from northern Iceland, or they also have a pure seaweed from the north of France that is very effective also. But right now, I'm really not so enamored with Japanese seaweed at this point because of the tragedies that they've had there.
The same thing can happen with chlorella products, which are also good chelators. When you're using a supplement, you have to be careful that chlorella powder hasn't already been exposed to heavy metals and absorbed those and simply adds to your burden. You need a clean product to absorb the heavy metals that you're carrying. So sourcing that out, looking for analysis of purity, are important things when you choose a product like that.
When you choose a natural product. Natural doesn't mean perfect. It means natural. And it can have all the deficits or advantages of the natural area it's from. Always want to look and source and look at the purity analysis of natural products, which can have tremendous benefits, but also can carry some risks. So at this point, we're going to go to a short break. And this is all you ever wanted to know about uterine bleeding. And we're going to be right back I'm Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist, physician assistant. This is Take Charge of Your Health, and I'm with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist, physician assistant, with my co-host,
Carol Peterson,
pharmacist, and this is Take Charge of Your Health. We're right in the middle of a discussion on abnormal uterine bleeding and the consequences, and what we're looking at is the greatest cure there is so far is prevention. So, Carol, where
and what
should we look at next?
I didn't want to forget about what happens during perimenopause. It's a time where they're actually skipped ovulation, and it's quite common. When you don't ovulate, don't form the egg, you don't form the corpus luteum, which makes progesterone, and a lot of it, your buildup from the follicular phase earlier doesn't get fluffed off as it should be with that extra progesterone that you get in the second part of your cycle. We sort of were taught, you and I were taught this, medical doctors were taught this, and I've changed my mind about how this works. The idea is that when you have the high amount of progesterone during the second part of your cycle, and then it drops, that's what brings on your bleeding. I believe that's not true, and I believe that because of experience with some women with serious PMS problems that would continue into the 1, 2, 3 day of bleeding. They would treat their symptoms with high levels of progesterone, never stop their progesterone, and bleeding still occurs. I've come to think that you need enough progesterone to make that layer secretory in order to shed it. So then we have women who go through cycle after cycle, and you'll know because you're not bleeding, you're not bleeding very much, and then you'll gush because you finally do get an ovulation, you do get a burst of progesterone, and it will slough off what you've been hanging onto and not shedding. So skip period is another incidents where you're building up the endometrium, and when you finally get the occasion to buff it off, it can be a huge bleed. If you are indeed skipping period, you can correct that by taking progesterone from middle of your cycle for the last 14 days of your cycle to mimic what your body should be doing if an ovulation has occurred. And by providing that extra progesterone, you should continue to cyclically bleed normally instead of ending up with a heavy bleed from an all at once occasion that you experienced after missed ovulation. So now we wanted to talk about fibroids a bit.
which are very common. What we're talking about when we're dealing with fibroids, 25% of women will have fibroids, and 50% overall after the age of 40 will have fibroids. Most of them will be small and without symptoms, but some can be very serious and very debilitating in terms of the symptoms that women experience. And one of the symptoms can be, depending on the position of the fibroid, can be excessive menstrual bleeding.
So before you have to jump into a surgery to cut fibroids out, which they can do just the fibroid, or they'll take your whole uterus, or they'll take your uterus and your ovaries too. Understanding fibroids and why they start forming is a good place to start. And we interviewed Dr. Alan Warshawski quite a long time ago. He's got a book called Healing Fibroids, which I think it's important that we introduce the concept that a fibroid is not the end of the line and it's going to keep growing until you hit menopause and maybe just stay there because your hormone stimulus is stopped. You can actively do something about fibroids. And I'd like to bring up using iodine, which after thyroid, which uses a lot of iodine, your breasts need a whole bunch of iodine, and so do your ovaries and your uterus need a lot of iodine. And I like to think of iodine as a substance. When there's not enough, it's when you start making these nodules and cysts and things that shouldn't be there, that iodine is the correction for a lot of cystic things in your body. For example, breast cysts, non-cancerous breast cysts, will disappear, particularly with progesterone, to deal with some of the excess estrogen activity, and that bit of iodine. It's rather miraculous.
I've been told that wherever there is a cystic growth, anywhere in the body, iodine can drain it, can assist draining it. And so I've been, have put iodine topically throughout the body, even on boils. And they will rapidly come to a head and burst and drain. Iodine can be a very effective treatment. But iodine is essential for the body's ability to make thyroid hormone. And thyroid hormone is essential for the body's ability to make progesterone. You have a circle there. And understanding all these interplays back and forth are so important because we're not one hormone. We're not one nutrient. I really don't believe, unless there is a problem, imbalance problem, I don't believe in just saturating the body with one hormone, with one mineral. I believe in creating balance.
I remember back in the old days, we even had a tampon type thing that was saturated with iodine to be vaginally inserted for this very thing.
That's not that old.
Or we're not that old.
Well, there were still are treatments where the cervix would be painted with iodine, and then the body would be given a little bit of extra magnesium, and then the end result would be a feeling of heat, and that heat would be in the breasts and be in the ovaries. You literally could feel where the iodine was being drawn to, and it would create heat in those organs. And this was a specific treatment for fibrocystic breast disease. So again, what we're talking about, the best treatment for fibroids is prevention. And how do we create prevention? We create prevention through a balance, through working with our liver, through a correct diet that doesn't allow this excessive accumulation of inflammatory estrogens to build up, having what we call a lipotrophic effect on the liver, which a breakdown of the fats through the liver, and help the liver do that. You can help it with enzymes. You can help it with ox bile. You can help it with lipase, which is an enzyme very specific to break down fats, and amylase, an enzyme very specific for breaking down carbohydrates, and protease, an enzyme specific for breaking down proteins. And you put those together with a pancreatic enzyme. And the pancreatic enzymes are very powerful, and they also help digest proteins. So you take the pancreatic enzymes between meals, and you're attempting to block the growth and attempting to shrink the fibroid, which is very difficult. It's easier to prevent them and block the growth than it is to shrink the fibroid. Because of the numerous variables that we have when we're dealing with fibroids and hormonal issues, there's really no one slam dunk protocol that works for fibroids and that can guarantee you'll shrink your fibroid. But we have very good protocols that can effectively stop growth, and some even shrink the fibroid. But you know, one thing we cannot forget, and that's really important, is the role that progesterone plays in all this. Carol, your favorite hormone.
Yes. Fibroids indeed are subject to estrogen stimulation, just like the rest of the endometrium. So that's, again, where progesterone comes into balance. We've talked about prevention, and for some women, it's too late. They've already had surgery. And so on this website, and it looks a little further, and we talked about it at the beginning. We talked about the cavity it leaves. Women end up having more surgeries. They have mesh to hold up their bladders. But right at the beginning, right at the very beginning, you go into the body and you take out a very important organ, the uterus, and we don't even know, talk about unexplored parts of the earth. We don't even know half the work of the uterus. We know it does quite a lot. And then women are often encouraged to also have their ovaries removed because I think they're still being told, well, you've had the children you're going to have, you don't really need them. However, your ovaries have been busy making estradiol, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, and then you snip them out. But even if you don't snip them out, sometimes the surgery damages the ovaries so much, even though they're still there, that you are essentially in surgical menopause. And this has immediate effects.
It's a female surgical castration when it's done in that way. It's an instant, immediate, one day you have hormones which have not been balanced and have created a lot of pain and instability in your life. And the next day you have nothing.
Nothing. And I would like to emphasize here the importance of progesterone. One of the things that happens after a surgical menopause is women can't sleep. And progesterone's like the number one hormone to help you sleep. It's calmative, it allows your brain to relax, it balances adrenaline so you don't have anxiety. These women are full of high anxiety. They might get estrogen prescribed, and they will be told, you don't have a uterus, you don't need progesterone. How many hormones in your body have one target organ? Do you know of any?
Let me think. No.
How crazy. This just makes me crazy. in adulthood, wrote a book on PMS 50 years ago about the importance of progesterone. She also wrote that if you have a surgical menopause, you need more progesterone.
Not less.
More than if somebody has been to the hormone deficiency occurring with a normal menopause. We recognize it then. We don't recognize it when we take the entire organ out. It makes no sense. So women are given high doses of estrogen after a hysterectomy. Why high? Because it's not working all that well. Progesterone is essential to stimulate estrogen receptors for estrogen. And if you're ever lucky enough to get some progesterone, you're going to have a big reaction of suddenly all that estrogen in your body that's not working is suddenly intensified. So it creates a mess for a woman trying to cope with all this. And so essential, after a surgical menopause, with or without ovaries, if there's any anxiety, sleep problems, progesterone has to be there. And good, generous doses, I'm talking at least 300 milligrams a day.
In many cases, the majority of cases, it's not necessary to remove the ovaries. So be aware of that. You have some choices here. There are also the possibility of a myomectomy. Do your shopping around and talk with multiple doctors, because they're in some cases, depending on where the fibroid is, they can move in through an abdominal cut, through a laparoscopy, and remove the fibroid without removing the uterus. Now, that doesn't mean that fibroids won't come back, but if you're on a program like we're describing, and you add to it herbs that support the liver and work with the liver, and work with progesterone, and work with enzymes, you have a much better chance of creating a balance, so there's no need for that fibroid to grow again. A myomectomy might be an excellent choice for you. So think about it in that way, and shop around and understand your options. This is not just a minor surgery. This is a major surgery, and it can't be looked at as a minor surgery.
No, they're saying 6 weeks off at least, and so many women are writing that they've gotten a bloated abdomen after the surgery, and some saying it's persisting for years. There's another symptom here post-hysterectomy that I don't think we should ignore. And it's grief.
Well,
kind of hard to describe entirely or what you should do with it, but there is a grieving of the organs you don't have, the sexual organs, that's written about quite a few places on the internet.
Well, sometimes that's very directly as a result of a sudden and abrupt hormone shift. So the potential of that to be avoided is very high when you're working with a program like what we have just outlined. When you're working with the hormones, when you're working with herbs, when you're working with a good diet. I think the first part of our show could be named Everything You Wanted to Know About Fibroids and Extra Bleeding But Were Afraid to Ask. So we're going into an abrupt shift in our program because we have this wonderful opportunity. We have Carol at an ILADS conference, which is an international Lyme disease conference. People come from all over the world to learn, one, how to treat Lyme allopathically with antibiotics, and also there's a tract on herbal protocols, as well as vibrationally. So they're all different modalities. They're all showing successes. And doctors and practitioners go to this conference to learn and to bring these technologies back into their practice. But something caught the eye of Carol, a nutrient, an herbal, and she called up and said, listen, we want to share this information with the audience. So, Carol, I'm going to pass it to you.
I'm here in Boston, Massachusetts, as Corinne said, the iLads conference, and we've got about 600 practitioners
here,
which is quite exciting. But if you remember earlier, I spoke about modified citrus pectin as a possible absorbent. We were talking about this in context of estrogen detoxification, and we talk a lot about detoxification in our programming from time to time. I think it's very important in this day and age. So to my surprise and delight, I am now acquainted with CJ Hartman. He works for a company called Clear Synergy, and they are the providers of modified citrus pectin. So CJ, I'd like to welcome you to our program. And if you could tell us just a little bit about yourself and how you came to be involved in integrative medicine, and particularly this product. I had the chance to interrogate you about details about this, and I learned so much more. I wanted to share it.
Thank you, Carol, and thank you for having me. I've been in the supplement industry for over a decade now, and have really enjoyed it. I got into it. My whole career has been in health. I worked for a vision care company, and now I'm in supplements. And I really delved into learning about nutrients, about science, and have really enjoyed meeting with hundreds of practitioners over the last decade, learning from them, learning about their patient cases, what they found that works, and it really is fascinating. My current company, Clinical Synergy, has a product that I believe you're familiar with called Modified Citrus Pectin. Our product is called Pectisol C.
Tell us a little bit, where does that come from? How is it made? And what qualities does it possess that we can be using this to help people out?
Absolutely. So our modified citrus pectin, Pectisol C, is made from the pith, or the white part, of oranges, lemons, and limes. We then have a proprietary process that enzymatically gets it small enough to be absorbed into the bloodstream. And that's where it has two primary functions. The first is it helps with detoxification. It binds to heavy metals, lead, mercury, cadmium, arsenic, in the blood, and helps to bind to them and then excrete them from the body. The second function of Pectisol C is that it binds to a pro-inflammatory protein, galectin 3. And galectin 3 helps to create and build what is called the biofilm in our bodies.
Oh, that's an important point right there. We have a lot of trouble with accessing, our body's immune system has trouble accessing bacteria and fungus and parasites within a biofilm. They create a little colony. It becomes difficult to address. Your immune system is blocked from acting on these pathogens.
The protein encases these colonies and protects them, and yet they're bioactive and move through our bodies, create immune havoc. So the body can never identify the actual problem because the problem is encased by the protein, and yet it experiences all the symptoms of the problem without being able to identify the cause. Biofilms create havoc in the immune system. Modified citrus pectin, what we're talking about, years ago, I knew about the white of the citrus fruits being very high in bioflavonoids. Is this product also high in bioflavonoids? And if so, how does that help us?
So we take that white part of the citrus fruit, the orange, lemons, and limes, and we actually make it small enough to be absorbed in the blood. So it doesn't have any bioflavonoid activity. It really acts in two ways. One, to bind to the heavy metals, and two, to really bind to this protein galectin 3 that promotes inflammation and help to make it inert so that inflammation is systemically reduced throughout circulation.
That's huge. And one of the things you and I discussed, which I was delighted to talk about, was glyphosate. And I had myself tested for glyphosate, which you can do, and I was shocked at the level because I make a definite effort to drink, to eat organically and not eat things that may be potentially sprayed. We've talked about glyphosate problems on this program, and CJ tells me modified citrus pectin can be useful for helping rid your body of glyphosate.
Yes, so it does have an affinity to help do that. We are working on putting together a comprehensive study right now so that we have concrete data to be able to share with practitioners about the benefit that it has and how best to use it with their patients.
Now, I understand that the Komen Society is talking about this modified citrus pectin to stop breast cancer metastasis. How does that all work?
So we have a number of clinical studies that have been done on both breast and prostate cancer, but that pro-inflammatory protein galectin-3, that is what helps cancer cells build blood vessels and give them the blood supply that they need to stay alive, as well as for new cancer cells to get the blood that they need to actually originate and multiply. So by our modified citrus pectin, Pectisol C, binding to excess galectin-3 that would help to promote cancer growth, you're making that inert so that there isn't this blood supply to create new cells, and whatever treatment that the patient happens to be undertaking starts to be more effective because that pro-inflammatory protein is kind of taken out of the way so the actual treatment can really do what it's intended to do.
One of the things I'm delighted with is this seems to be a easily tolerated, mild form of detoxification.
Yes.
In a powder, you mix it up in liquid. It's pleasant tasting. I'm really concerned about how our children are being exposed to metals and toxins, solvents, glyphosate, and what kind of help you can give children that they will actually participate in using. And I think this is a very, very pleasant solution.
Joe, that's a great point. Our Pectisol C is available in a number of different forms. We have it in a lime powder, which is very easily mixed with water and has a very nice taste to it. It is safe for children to take. We also have it in a plain powder for those people who don't like lime flavor. We have it in capsules and then tangerine chewables. So a number of different ways to take this product, but it is safe for children, and the lime powder seems to be the one that is easiest for them to take.
Now, how does it work in relationship to the glyphosate? Because one of the things that we have been very much aware of is the difficulty of our bodies to detox from the glyphosate. So how is this working?
That's why we're putting together this comprehensive study to be able to lay out all of the data as far as exactly step-by-step how it works. Right now we know that it detoxifies the body from the heavy metals, and it has an affinity for other toxins and things like glyphosate, but we actually need this study to give us the concrete data so we can go to practitioners and lay it out so they know, again, exactly how it works and what patients it would be best for.
Thank you so much. And it's so exciting that we can go with Carol to conferences and meet people like you and learn about what's new and how it works in our body and how we can incorporate it into our lives. I've had this citrus pectin for a while, and I make a juice for my son, fresh orange juice every morning, and then I put some of the citrus pectin in the juice, and he drinks it every day. It's sort of like, Mikey, is it okay? Giving it. Nothing's pickier than preteen children. Nothing is pickier. And it passes that test. So, Carol, thank you so much for bringing us with you, and thank you for focusing us on this product.
I think it's helpful for people to know there are solutions out there, no matter where you live, how you live, your age. In this day and age, we have to cope with a lot of toxicity. It's really wonderful to know that we have tools. CJ, would you like to give us your contact information?
Sure. So our company is Clinical Synergy. Our website is clinicalsynergyformulas.com. You can go there and find information about everything I've spoken about today and lots of information about our Pectisol C. You'll also find, if you're a person who likes to call in and talk to someone, our toll-free number is on the website as well.
Excellent.
And
thank you, Carol.
Thank you for sharing the information with us. And thank you there out there for spending this hour with us. And I know I always learn when I'm with Carol. And we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corrine Fornari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me, Left Hook from Redding, California. Their website is Redding Left Hook. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.